Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Peter Greer, on how leaders lose their way and how not to lose ours.
I want to be way more intentional about the people that I am in relationship with, and I can tell you that has changed the ability to see, to spot, to go off a mission. And King Solomon, who knows a thing or two about going off mission, he said, "Wounds from a friend can be trusted." And so it's like, if that's true, who are the friends who love us enough to inflict a few wounds on the journey together?
Peter Greer, next. Peter Greer's book, How Leaders Lose Their Way, is a cautionary tale, equipping leaders to recognize personal and spiritual drift while providing steps to maintain their mission-focused leadership. Peter Greer is CEO of Hope International and author of the previous book, Mission Drift. Peter, tell us why the subject of mission drift in an organization or an individual is of such interest to you.
Yeah, and maybe there's just a little bit of the backstory of why write at all. My day job is working with Hope International. We, you know, engage in global poverty alleviation and global missions, and that's my day job. But I also love to write because it's an opportunity to learn. And I always write out of a question, and not some sort of a theoretical question, but a question that is directly impacting us, our life, our leadership, our journey as an organization. And so you mentioned mission drift. That was not because we'd figured out how not to drift. It's because we recognize just how easy it is, just how many examples there are of organizations that drift. And then the book writing is a chance to learn from others who are further and farther along on the journey and say, what can we learn? What can we take away? What can we apply? And so that's really always the starting point of how can we have a subject that we're wrestling through as an organization and then learn from people that are further and farther ahead on the journey. And Mission Drift was one. We did one called Lead with Prayer, trying to say, how do we incorporate prayer practices into everything that we do as an organization? And it's been a great joy, source of great delight to learn and write and learn from others.
Well, if you would tell us a bit about Mission Drift and its connection to this current book, How Leaders Lose Their Way.
Yeah, in many ways, this is kind of the sequel. A decade later, you mentioned, but Mission Drift was really about how many organizations start with a very clear Christ-centered mission, and then over time, almost become unmistakable to what their founding mission was. So we give examples of institutions like Harvard University that their founding mission statement was to be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of your life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ. That's very clear. That is compelling. That's not exactly what the core mission is today. And it's not to say there's not amazing things happening. It's not.
Right.
It's just to say that's not the mission today. And so 10 years later, we started having conversations about, does it make sense to do a revised version of Mission Drift? And unfortunately, there's a lot more case studies that break our heart of organizations that have lost their way. But I can tell you that that was not of interest. But what was of interest is recognizing the connection that I think we missed a decade ago, that behind every story of an organization that loses their way, there's a story of a leadership team that has lost their way. Their faith grew lukewarm. Their vision became scattered. And so in many ways, it's saying not how do organizations drift, but how do leaders drift? How do we lose our way? And so it really was this exploration of what are some of the principles of mission drift, but let's apply them to our life so that we can have more people being marked by long-term faithfulness and not slowly becoming either lukewarm or completely losing our way.
And so as you write in your book, personal drift precedes organizational drift. It's upstream from it.
That's right. Yes.
As we talk about this subject, leaders losing their way, I mean, it's something that we see frequently or maybe even constantly in the news, right? I mean, it's we're confronted with it all the time.
Unfortunately, that is true. And I don't know how many more stories we need to hear before we actually take it seriously. But one of the interesting things is what is our reaction when we hear the next story? Mm-hmm. And most of us, if we're honest, would hear a story of a leader that lost their way and we would ask a question. We would say, how did he or how did she do that? And almost a little bit of sitting in a place of judgment, like, I can't believe they did that. I think that's not a very healthy posture approach. I think it is much more an invitation for introspection. Much more when we hear the next story, it should be where, not if, but where am I slowly going off track? And the thing that was just so heartbreaking is it's like story after story, and the common theme was every leader who significantly lost their way said the same thing. I never thought it would happen to me. And I think in the hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, this is one of my favorite lines, and it says, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. That is an honest assessment. That is a good starting point. And in my own life, that's how I start. We can all make a mess of things. We can all drift. We can all lose our way. And that is the starting point to saying, let's have our eyes open to where we might slowly be making compromises that might not seem big in the moment, but when compounded by time, will lead us to a very different place.
And as you say in your book, and I think you just basically said it, we really should all be able to admit that that is the default of all of our hearts, prone
exactly
to wander.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the book is How Leaders Lose Their Way and How to Make Sure It Doesn't Happen to You. My guest is Peter Greer, and he wrote the book with Jill Heise. And Peter has written many books, including Mission Drift. We talked to him about it, I guess, about a decade ago. And parenthetically, Peter, this discussion, obviously, you're aiming it at leaders, particularly Christian leaders. And yet, at the same time, it applies to all believers. I mean, in the book of Hebrews, we're warned not to drift away from the things we've learned.
Yeah, we take an intentionally broad definition of leadership, meaning leadership is influence. And so by that definition, we're all leaders in our spheres and our spaces. But heartbreaking to me is the fact that there was a study that found that 24% of people that walk away from faith do so because they were harmed or hurt by the example or actions of a Christian leader. 24%. That is significant. So there is a lot at stake. There's an awful lot at stake for all of us. Our actions influence not just us, not just those, but they influence the perception of a watching world. And so I think there's a lot at stake for all of us to recognize just how easy it is. The default is drift. It takes the hard work to have a different path of long-term faithfulness.
Well, before we know if we're drifting, and you, I think you make this point in your book, don't we need to have clarity about what our individual mission is as a believer?
Absolutely, right? I mean, the term drift, for me, that I think about being on the water in a canoe. I grew up, my parents taught me to love the outdoors and love being on a canoe. And sometimes, if you don't know where you're going, you are definitely going to just go. You're going to be zigzagging. You're going to be going all over the place. You need that object on the horizon to constantly be able to be making the micro course corrections. And then it also takes you holding that paddle or you grabbing that oar and doing the work in alignment with that destination. And I think that is an apt kind of analogy of what it is that it takes. You got to know your mission. You got to know what a life well lived looks like. And then you have to connect it to the actions that you and I are taking today. And I guarantee, if you don't know where you're going or you think you're just going to drift to get there, you will reach a destination, but it's not going to be the one that you want.
And if you could summarize it for us, it sounds like it's the same for every believer. What is our mission as a Christian?
Well, I love how oftentimes we can complicate things. I love how Jesus gave it real simply. Here you go. You want to know the summary of all the law and the commandments? Here you go. You don't even need a pen to write it down. Love God. Love your neighbor. That's it. So that's the mission. And then the specific area where that is lived out obviously has a lot of variety and beauty and understanding the way that we are wired. But to me, one of the most powerful experiences in terms of identifying that destination with that next level of clarity was after my grandfather. I got to be with him when he graduated from this life. He just lived with such faithfulness. I mean, he just did it right. And after that, and you start hearing stories, to me, the active way of writing down my eulogy was a powerful exercise of saying, what is that life well lived? And I was so inspired by the words that were spoken about his life. I couldn't help but say, what are the words that I hope would be spoken about my own life? And I actually put it on my calendar every March 24th on my birthday. I start my day by reading that. And maybe this is a little bit odd, but 1 year closer, here we go. That's going to come. Is my life, are my actions in alignment with what I say matters most? And oftentimes it is a little bit of introspection that leads to a little bit more action to say, I need to make some course corrections this year.
Do you ever revise that eulogy?
Yeah, I actually did last year. And things change and
yeah.
People in your life. And so absolutely. But to me, it's like, there's no problem changing the destination. Like, you want to always be having a little sharper focus. And my guess is your journey, as you get a little bit closer, you're going to see things a little bit differently than you did when you're in your 20s or when you're in your 30s. You're going to have things a little bit clearer. And so I don't think there's any problem in changing that. To me, the big problem is that too many of us drift and think we're just going to end up at this wonderful spot. And I don't know anyone who drifts to a place of all the good stuff in life. That takes work, that takes focus, that takes intentionality.
And hence the imagery of rowing that you point out in your book to illustrate the challenges of staying on mission, or in the case of the leader, of staying on mission and leading on mission and not drifting.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And if I could, there's a lot to... My guess is many people that are listening know and have examples in their life, or people that they've looked up to, or people that they've read about, that say that was a story of drift. To me, I don't think we need more knowledge about how easy drift happens. To me, the real work is, so what do we do about it? And that's where every single chapter, you know, my guess is most of us know, isolation is lethal. If you don't have other people in your life who actively, you can get the stuff that you're dealing with and it's a safe place, that is utterly lethal. But to me, the interesting thing is, okay, how do we do it? And I think that's really was the fun part of the research is, don't show me just the issues. What would it look like for us to put that into practice in our own life? We know going fast, fast and furious is a way to go off mission because you're just not paying attention. We know pace matters, but how do we do it? We know money trips us up. It captivates our heart all too easily. Okay, we know that. How do we do it? And so that was the fun part, was just learning from the practices of those who have gone before us and to say, how did you do it? Tell me what you put in practice in your life. And I can tell you just personally, this book project, this research, it changed some of the practices in my own life in a very significant way, because I know the path that I was on, it was not necessarily a path of long-term faithfulness. So that's been really helpful.
Well, as you mentioned, Peter, and we all know this, the scripture teaches it, but it's easy to forget that the things that divert leaders, anybody really, other Christians, from their missions, and what seems to drive most people, money, power, and sex, your book talks about those, but can you give some practical thoughts on what do we, okay, we know that, what do we do about it? How do we avoid it?
And I want to hear how you do that in your own life. That's, I think for all of us, that was really the fun of having the conversations. But just one practical example. So we were just talking about the importance of having other people in our life. And my experience was I was much more methodical and intentional about the plans that I had for the year or for the quarter or whatever than the people that I am in relationship with. And long term, I think we over-index on the plans and activities and under-index on the importance of people. And so we created a real simple tool. It's a constellation mentoring model that looks at what are the most important relationships in your life. And for me, having names down on paper, having this model of these are the people that I am going to be spending time with this year to learn in these areas. These are my core four. These are the people that there are no secrets. These are the people that the stuff that gets pushed down in our life, these are the safe people to get that out. These are the people that are going on a journey, and these are my prayer partners, and we're committing to be praying for each other this year. And these are the people that we're pouring into. So maybe too much granular specificity, but It's actually a model that says, I want to be way more intentional about the people that I am in relationship with. And I can tell you, that has changed the ability to see, to spot, to go off a mission. And King Solomon, who knows a thing or two about going off mission, he said, wounds from a friend can be trusted. And so it's like, if that's true, who are the friends who love us enough to inflict a few wounds on the journey together? But how do you live it out? What's this look like in your life?
Well, one thing I was going to ask you was about the subject of the spiritual disciplines. And for me personally, those are so critical, whatever it may be, fellowship, daily time in the scriptures, in prayer, etc.
Yeah, no, in many ways, that's also part of the conclusion, right? It's that the small things that we do matter more than we realize when compounded by time. And if you and I, in our backyard, we had this little tiny acorn and this little tiny oak tree that was starting to take root. If you and I go and weed that, how long would it take? 5 seconds, pull it out. You ignore that little tree, you ignore that for 10 years, it is going to be a project that will consume a long time. And I think that, to me, is the difference. Are we going to be people that weed? Are we going to be people that do the work today? Or are we going to be people that ignore, hope it goes away? And that was the tragic thing. I can't tell you strongly enough the level of remorse and regret and sadness that we heard. Everyone wishing that they had a do-over. Like, everyone wishing that they could go back and just pull up that sapling, just pull up that little, instead of ignoring it, thinking it's going to go away on its own. It never does. It only grows. And so to me, that was like a really significant piece of what I do today might seem inconsequential, but the habits, the patterns, what I do today that sets the pattern for what I do this week, that matters more. That will determine our destination.
Well, the book is How Leaders Lose Their Way and How to Make Sure It Doesn't Happen to You. My guest is Peter Greer. He is the president and CEO of Hope International, and he co-wrote the book with Jill Heise. And I'm wondering, Peter, obviously the major issues, these big issues, money, power, and sex, those are quite well known. What about, and I think early on you used the phrase, a small compromises. You just explained it with the illustration there of the oak tree. What are some of those small compromises that we might be tempted to overlook or ignore?
And one of the phrases that we heard that broke my heart, because as we're having these interviews, we're having these conversations, the same phrase was used in multiple of the interviews. And the phrase was this: all of a sudden. Mm. But then you start actually looking at their story in their own words, and it was never all of a sudden. It was small cracks. It was small compromises. And so the attentiveness to the small compromises is not small in consequence over time. And so the question is, how do we pay attention? How do we actually see? How do we spot? How do we identify? And yeah, some of the big ones, but to me, it's far more interesting to go upstream and say, what are the attitudes? What are the attitudes? And just one very practical one, I am convinced that if we don't have any downtime, if we do not, and this was something that we heard, personal prayer matters. Personal prayer, and actually a posture that, as David wrote in Psalm 139, search me and know me. If you have not slowed down, if you have not put down a device, if you have not slowed your heart, changed your breathing, and with sincerity, oftentimes with hands open for me, it's like, Lord, show me. Show me not if I'm drifting, show me where I'm drifting. Show me where there are those small compromises, because I don't want to ignore them. I don't want to wake up someday and all of a sudden realize that there had been a series of very unwise decisions that I had made. So I think that is, at the end of the day, it's like, how do we go upstream to get the attitudes before the actions of where we might be going off track? And just one real one, I deserve this. That is a toxic idea. Look at all I'm doing for you, God. Look at, people don't understand. I deserve, that is a toxic attitude. It'll never happen to me. toxic attitude. This idea of there's an exceptionalism. The rules don't apply to me. That's good for other people. And that, again, the example of King Solomon, if you look at his life and what he wrote in the book of Proverbs, he knew what to do. And then you look at his life, he didn't do it. And I don't think that's just for a king from a long time ago. I think that's a very modern example that if we know and yet don't do in our life, the bigger the gap that grows between know and do, I think the bigger danger we find ourselves in.
So as you said, and you write in your book, King Solomon knew better. And of course, Ecclesiastes takes us through these various avenues, various places where he looked to find meaning and didn't find it. Havel, he concluded that life was ultimately what, meaningless or vapor, that kind of thing. How do you explain that, knowing what to do? We have the head knowledge, we know the Bible, and yet we don't do it.
Maybe it's just because we're on this theme, but I find it so interesting to look at the contrast between Solomon and David. Both of them had plenty of times that they went off track in pretty significant ways. Mm-hmm. And yet David, if you look at it, he had a friend, Jonathan, who was with him. He had Nathan the prophet, who said, you are that person in the story. He had Joab, his commander, who said, that is not a good idea. There are multiple times that David was confronted by individuals who knew him, who loved him enough to tell him, you're going the wrong way. And yet in the life of King Solomon, do you know how many times we can see someone challenging his authority? How many times someone went and said, that's a really bad idea? Zero. Never once. And so that is one of the things that makes a difference. Who in our life have we invited to inflict a few wounds to get us back on track? That is so essential, because we're all going to go off track. We're all going to wander in a different direction. But who in our life is going to lovingly say, you're going the wrong way?
Well, Peter, I know our time is going very quickly here, but I wanted to ask you one sort of aspect of the book that is how it is put together, how it's constructed. That is that each chapter ends with a prayer. And I'm wondering if you could tell us why that is and what kinds of things the prayers touch on.
Yeah, because if we want to stay on mission, we need help. We need help.
Big time.
And so if this book could be misinterpreted as a, here's what you need to do, as opposed to, here's who you need to go to for help, it would have completely missed out on what is most important. This is not a self-help book. This is a you need help book, and knowing who to go to. So our friend Ryan Skoog, he was the co-author in Lead with Prayer. We asked him if he would provide some prayers at the end of every chapter, and I just love them. I have prayed them. I continue to pray them, and it just gives words to these longings, chapter by chapter, that at the end of the day, this is not our strength, white knuckle it, grip, just do, try harder. It is, this is an issue. You're probably having some drift, and our gracious, gracious Father invites us back. And so seek his ways. Search me, Lord, know me, and lead me in your way, as maybe the heart posture of the entire project.
Well, Peter, maybe somebody has just joined us now. They've just tuned in, so to speak. Maybe they're listening on the podcast and they can rewind and whatever. But what are the main takeaways here? If you could give us kind of a quick sort of summary recap.
The statistics are that 1 out of 3 leaders finish well, meaning they do not significantly abuse their power, platform, or privilege. That is the reality, which means 2 out of 3 lose their way. That breaks my heart. And that means statistically, it is easier to lose your way than it is to actually have that life that is marked by long-term faithfulness. So pay attention, roll up your sleeves, understand what matters. Let's go for it, and living in light of God's amazing grace.
And it's all about finishing well.
That's right. Yeah. Let's go more than 1 out of 3. Let's go 3 out of 3.
Well, the book again, How Leaders Lose Their Way and How to Make Sure It Doesn't Happen to You. My guest, Peter Greer, and he co-wrote the book with Jill Heise. Peter is CEO of Hope International, president and CEO of Hope International, a global nonprofit working to alleviate physical and spiritual poverty in 29 countries around the world. And Peter, just as sort of a footnote, tell us a little bit about Hope International and how you go about alleviating physical and spiritual poverty.
Yeah, no, that's so kind of you to ask. Yeah, so we are an organization that invests in the dreams of families in the world's underserved communities as we proclaim and live the gospel. So this maybe unusual mix of entrepreneurship, access to capital, savings and loans, training, along with a group discipleship model. So if people have heard about microfinance movement or church-centered savings groups, that's the space where we are. But really just going beyond the short-term provision of immediate need and trying to help families create jobs so they can care for families over the long term. So that's the mission, that's the model. And if you want to learn more, you can go to hopeinternational.org. But yeah, Christ-centered microenterprise development.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Peter Greer, CEO of Hope International and author of How Leaders Lose Their Way. Go to hopeinternational.org. On tomorrow's program, it's Emma Frere on how Catholicism is trending in America's power centers.
On a subconscious level, you start to think, well, maybe I should be Catholic too. If you're seeing these smart, well-read, devout people who are Catholic, it's quite natural that, you know, you would admire them and maybe want to emulate their life choices in many areas, including their Catholicism.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.